This is the Kevin Shi Show.
Welcome to a new episode of the Kevin Shi Show. your host, Kevin Shi. Today, I have a good friend, Lawrence Chu, to talk about the financial and economic impact of the coronavirus. Welcome to my show, Lawrence.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks for having me on the show.
So can you give us a bit of background about yourself, Lawrence, please?
Sure. So I am from Hong Kong, of course, studied abroad, and basically been in the investment side, investment banking side, since I graduated from college. Did that for a while, and then I moved to the buy side kind of a couple of years into my career. So I was in firstly in a hedge fund, and then subsequently in a private equity role. So that was kind of from 2005 onwards, and did a lot of investments, a lot of interesting investments in the private space, looking at also public markets. We were mostly focused on situations, so interesting opportunities, privately negotiated opportunities. And that's kind of how I built my career, and been looking at China, Greater China, Asia for the last couple of years. And subsequently, we set up funds that invested in this kind of growth segment, in the kind of special situation segment. Last couple of years, we've moved our focus. We're doing a lot of emerging market kind of investments, looking at Southeast Asia, going a little bit more on the technology side. So how do we leverage technology to deliver solutions to kind of the growing middle class in these areas, but still kind of revolving around finance. So that's kind of my background. So I get to see a lot of different things, meet a lot of different people, and, you know, learn a lot from guys like yourself. Some story as
I learn
well.
More from you. Yeah. So this virus is how, on a scale of, you know, of past crashes or economic impact, how do you rate this this virus event that we're facing right now?
So personally, I feel that, you know, that it has some impact even on our businesses. So, you know, both from businesses that we invest in, so we have a portfolio of businesses, to even kind of my own operations, right? You know, I've lived through three cycles, you can say. This one's a little different. I think this one hits the demand side more than anything else, right? We've had to make tough choices, necessary choices, pretty fast choices. And, you know, it's not a pretty sight, but it's also about the viability of a business, you know, going forward. I guess the difference is it's not a financial crisis until, of course, there's a knock-on effect. But more so, it's, you know, affects the masses, affects the people. Because, you know, unlike maybe the 2008 financial crisis or, you know, bursting of a tech bubble in 2000, a lot of this was created by, you know, financial instruments and over-leveraging. You know, we do see some of that knock-on effect, but it's primarily this kind of COVID is, you know, people are not out, right? People are at home for a month, 2 months. Airlines are not operating. You know, it has a massive knock-on effect. So this is kind of unprecedented. I think people say this is more like 1930s Great Depression type of scenario, because it's really affecting the Main Street, not just Wall Street.
The market has suffered a big crash. I was up all night that night when the Dow fell 3,000 points, first time ever. But since then, the financial market kind of stabilizes, kind of like all this virus thing has kind of like has been factored in the financial market, especially with the stock market. But my concern is, if this thing prolongs till maybe well through the summer, till 6 months, a lot of businesses' bonds is going to default. I mean, how can you pay your bond obligations when there's no business for your side, right? And the bond market, according to my knowledge, is much bigger than the stock market, right? So the financial economy is going to have a huge impact on this if this drags on longer. What's your take on this?
Absolutely, Kevin. I think you hit it on the spot. So there's some like differences I feel this time around. So the markets obviously dive when there's uncertainty, right? This is a new thing. Like, it hasn't happened in the last 50 years. So it's very different. That's why, you know, people just liquidate, right? And liquidation plus when there's leverage, you have a little bit of financial panic, and that kind of downward spiral accelerates selling. Even though we've dropped quite a bit, you know, in hindsight, if you look at it from a longer term perspective, we're really only giving back a little bit of the gains from the last few years, right?
Yeah.
So is it very painful? It's painful, but is it a crash? Actually, I don't feel the full brunt yet. So we haven't seen what people call capitulation, which means like all out selling, who don't care, just get me out of this crap, right? I don't think we've seen that yet. And, you know, we may see this if, again, you said it correctly, if there's kind of 6 months, right? If there's a longer duration. Because what the government has done positively, and you've seen the markets go back up recently, is that they've gone ahead of the curve. So if you remember in 08, it took them 14 months to deploy all this like TARP and, you know, rescue package. This time, you know, they cut interest rates and did a lot of financial stuff, stimulus package before things are going to get bad. We already know things are going to get bad short term. Unemployment in the U.S., it's gone. No, not in our lifetime have we seen a 3 million unemployment number in a week. And, and, you know, if it delays, as you said, unemployment claims may go to 30 million. That's a quarter of the U.S. workforce, right? Obviously, it's short term. It's restaurants. It's all this kind of stuff. You know, I guess that's the tough thing, right? And, you know, you're looking at now businesses who can survive 3 months, 6 months off the cash they have, right? And those that can't, particularly small businesses, it's very tough. That's why you see short-term unemployment. You know, longer run, I guess I'm not a specialist in like this virus. It's unfortunate that, you know, some people, you know, pass away from this, get sick. And all in all, it's so far, I think, is a matter of like months till we kind of see this hopefully die down and things come back on track. But yeah, there will be companies that survive and companies that don't.
Do you think a better, because a lot of people is like trying to call the bottom when we're going to see the end of the crash or the recession or whatever. For me, I feel like you can't see it from a financial KPI model. I mean, there's no number that tells you. The only two numbers I see is probably the slowing down or the stabilizing of the new cases in the US and Europe. I mean, unless those two places stop accelerating or even start declining their number of new cases, I don't think the financial market can stabilize. What's your take on that?
You're totally right. There's no magic bullet here. I think, you know, as longer term investors, these corrections usually play out well for those who come in. Not so much on market timing, but just basically choosing the right things to invest in, right? If you know a company, you know a stock, they have track record, and you feel they're cheap based on this kind of market volatility, you're always going to do well in 3 years, 5 years. Where it's a little bit different this time, I feel, is that you can't bet the index yet, I feel. I mean, usually in these kind of crisis, we would typically bet the index, right? Because it's just a passive thing. You don't have to think about it. You don't lose sleep over it. This time around, I think it's a bit early to go in the index, purely because there's such a big real economy knock-on effect. And if you think about like whether it's the Hang Seng, but more so, I think, S&P, you have a lot of companies that are in the index that may not survive, right? Mm-hmm. So if we're looking at like stock picking, like looking at particular sectors, we like things that have good balance sheets right now. Like it's kind of back to your thing, who's not going to default, who's going to default. You know, healthcare is always good, right? Some consumer staples, e-commerce, you know, some technology companies, digital media, that's great. Yeah. Your hospitality, your airlines, your consumer discretionary, that is going to be tough because you're going to see airlines effectively, unless they get bailed out, I don't really know how they're going to survive, right? So, I mean, if looking at it that way, it's a little bit more, unless you're experienced enough in the market, I would be very cautious about like what someone buys. at this point in time. So, you know, maybe it's not a bad idea to just wait it out a couple of months, right? I mean, there's definitely no rush to do it, especially if you're not in it day to day. If you're looking at it all the time and you're kind of, you know what you want to buy, then fair enough. That's a different thing. I mean, usually these things don't happen over, like, they're not over in 3 months, right? I think the uncertainty is so high. If, like you said, if things don't pan out in the next 3 weeks, 3 months, and you have an extended period of time, you're definitely getting a wave of defaults, knock-on effects, and you probably see the equity market go down a lot more. One other metric that you love is that I feel the bond market, the credit market, probably will be a very good indicator of where equity markets will go, right? Okay. Because if the bond markets are still trading at a massive discount, you can bet that the equity markets are not going to...
High yield bonds.
Exactly, because bonds are the ones that are relatively safe, what people think.
Do you think it's going to be a V-shaped economy, recovery, L-shape, U-shape? What's your take?
That's a good question. I really don't know. I kind of, you know, just to give you kind of how we plan it, we are basically taking next couple of months off.
Okay.
We just think the demand is going to be slow, that even with stimulus, people are going to be a little bit on the sidelines. Folks are out of a job, you know, in the credit space where we also play, you know, where we, you know, try to help people, lend money to people. We're taking a lot of risk off the table. There's not a demand issue. Everyone wants to borrow money, but you know, if you don't have a job, how are you going to pay me back? So we're kind of looking at it. I would say more not V shape, but more like a L shape, like a, or like a long U. So I would give it a couple months before really putting a lot of risk at work. But you know, we're still doing stuff. It's not like zero. We still have to kind of do things selectively and look at, again, maybe it's companies that have stronger balance sheets and that have a demand, a very strong demand case. You know, that's stuff we like.
So I was just thinking, even if, okay, Hong Kong, we're out of the virus, China, we're out of the virus, some countries out of the virus, we still have this problem of letting back other tourists or other foreign people in back to the country because you don't know where they've been, even if their country is free. What if they've been to other countries first? So I think we'll probably be in a long-term living in this semi-quarantine atmosphere in which like certain countries, you're free to roam within your own city or maybe with one or two countries. But then in mass, you're not allowed to go many places, right? So I think that was probably going to last for at least a year plus. And also just the fear sheer. I mean, the sheer fear that's installed in people's mind. I mean, like it's going to be a while before people start taking cruises, you know, going on these like huge parties and all that. So I think those effects will probably linger in the economy for a while. What's your take on that?
Absolutely agree. I mean, if I'm looking at just the market itself, like trying to invest in the market, you know, typically these drawdowns take like 50 to 150 days, right? So you have a balance, it comes back, it goes back up. But, you know, with all the kind of things that you said, you know, there is an anticipation that that is what is going to happen. So the demand side is not a V-shaped recovery. So, you know, let's just take airlines, right? Even if I wanted to fly, if most airlines are under administration and they have to work out a process for a government bailout, it takes time, right? So, you know, whatever, it takes 3 months and by the time I get the airline back in motion, and I want to travel, it is kind of the 6 month, 12 month horizon. So, I mean, one of the interesting things that we've been looking at, based on what's been happening geopolitically last couple of years, and obviously with this current situation, you know, it's almost like globalization has peaked. And even on the digital side, internet, there's a lot more due to privacy concerns and all of these kind of things, opportunities that are more regional. So I would say like, although the internet is supposed to be this like global thing, I think digital businesses will become also much more regional and even local focused. So there's still opportunity digital, but there's probably more opportunity for a local player than for like a big giant company, right, of sorts.
Yeah. you don't want like the Facebook or the Google to take all the data from China, right? That's why China had the foresight to build their own internet giant. And I think going forward, especially with the food supply, the medical supply, everything will be fostered like regionally. But from a cost benefit analysis, the unwinding of globalization would cause a lot of inefficiencies, because you no longer rely on scale, you no longer rely on the cheapest country to do your stuff. So I guess the whole world will have to grow even slower because of that. You think?
Maybe it's not a bad thing to deleverage a little bit, right? I feel like part of the issue that the demand side will show, you know, like we were talking about it earlier on. If you're all cash, there's no problem. It's just a market. When you're leveraged, that's where the problem hits, right? Because it's a chain reaction. It's a chain reaction. So, you know, I'm not talking about personal leverage as in like investing leverage. I'm really talking about all the companies in the world that are leveraged, right?
Intertwined,
Like, so, they're intertwined. They have, obviously, you know, borrowing money to buy your own stock. I mean, that's kind of a pretty aggressive move, right? So, and it causes a lot of moral hazard and issues. I mean, again, I pick on the airlines, but, you know, there's this whole thing in the U.S. Like, why should we bail out airlines? They borrow tons of money. They bought bad stock. And now they have no cash. So, like, and now you want the government to kind of come in again to bail you out. So, you know, maybe they should be nationalized. I don't know what the best thing is to do, right?
What are some of the lasting effects you see going forward after the virus is gone? What are some of the fundamental changes do you think that would happen to the world, to society, because of this virus thing? Like, you know, people, everybody's going to home office, remote work, or well, what are some of the trends?
I mean, we've been kind of fortunate because, like, you know, we run offices across the region, right? So we've had to kind of use this Zoom and other kind of productivity tools. You know, Microsoft, I'm actually a big fan now. They've really made a massive effort on the cloud space and kind of virtual working. So, you know, things like that, I feel huge difference, like how we communicate, you know, shorter meetings, a lot of like video kind of calls and meetings online. Education side, like my kids are on e-learning every day. You know, they're already very digital, but now they're even more digital. So I think, you know, the shift to digital is going to accelerate. And this could be impacted all across the board. Virtual kitchens, you know, like, hey, just ordering takeout, things like that. It's change. It's forced changed behavior, right? So I think that's the major impact, and that has knock-on effects on the traditional side, like, you know, restaurants and you know, people still want to get hang out. That's I get it, there's this little physical element, but, you know, what does that impact on real estate? And
that's what my question is. I mean, I'm a big investor in REITs. I thought REITs is pretty stable because it's just a property, and I thought real estate is less disruptive from technology, because you always need a place to go. I'm so shocked at this this virus. I mean, you look at office REITs, nobody needs an office anymore. Everybody's at home office. You look at retail REITs, you're not allowed to go to the shopping mall anymore. So this virus has really disrupted the real estate. And I think a lot of things is going to be long-lasting, especially office. I mean, why the hell do I need to rent, you know, $1 million, $500,000 worth of property in Central when everybody can just home office and I just have a nice office to meet my guests? That you know, you think a lot of these will have longer lasting impact even after the virus is gone?
I don't see that real estate will go away, right? You know, we're dying to go out and hang out and do something physical. I mean, that's just human nature. But you're totally right. I feel like with every crisis or opportunity, you know, there's an opportunity. And basically the winners of the real estate kind of game is either, again, still more, I would say, math and kind of well-priced traffic REITs and businesses, like, you know, Link and things like that, for sure. And, you know, Mapletree
I've been talking to a few of my friends in REITs and also in my own industry, self-storage. A few industry that's still going to meet up their dividend payments for REITs and DPU is self-storage. We're still okay. data center, they're doing more than okay. Infrastructure REITs, you know, toll bridges and all that, they're still okay. And healthcare. So these four are the bright spot of REITs right now. That I wouldn't say they're growing, but you know, they're still okay. So going forward, I'm gonna realign and probably e-commerce related, like logistics and all that.
Logistics. But
logistics is being shafted by retail. Logistics is very close to retail right now, because if the retail stores are closed, there's still, I think, 50% of their business is related to retail. So
for that's sure. Kind of a, so I think like what you mentioned is effectively technology, right?
Yeah.
What is going to be kind of a online offline merge, right? So like even traditional, I would say more retail offline REITs and properties, they, in order for them to outpace kind of the rest of the gang, they have to be a lot more understanding of their clients' behavior, right? How do they drive like online offline behavior? Because it's still going to be, there's going to be demand. I mean, like last thing I want to do is stay at home forever. I mean, I want to go out, but you know, we're sort of forced into this, and then obviously it drives kind of certain behaviors. But you're right, like healthcare, data centers, logistics, those are going to be very, very sought after investments.
A lot of people will say there's another third wave of the virus that may be coming a few months away. That's going to be very catastrophic, and that's the third world countries.
Mm.
India has 1 billion people. Mm. They can't, the slums, they can't really, you know, social distance. Mm. You know, Indonesia, Africa. I'm pretty sure the vaccine is maybe a year and a half away, but if they don't have the vaccine, I mean, for me, I'm scared to go to Indonesia for next year, even if everything's okay. I don't know if they're tested or not, right? Mm. So how would that affect your business? I know you do micro lending in developing countries and all that.
Mm.
How do you see, you think some of these less stable countries going to go bankrupt entirely, or what will we play? A war is going to be at a hand, or what's your take?
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate, I think, with, you know, this war against an invisible enemy, as they call it, right? It's difficult, and particularly in emerging markets, let alone in emerging markets. I mean, we have our own problems in Hong Kong and even in the US. Like, the amount of cases that they're handling, the hospitals cannot cope, right? So I can imagine how difficult it will be in some of the less developed countries. With that said, you know, I'm not a viral expert, but you know, we haven't seen massive breakouts so far in some of these warmer countries. And will there be a breakout? Don't know. But we are looking at it more from an external shock. So what are some of the external shocks? On the positive side, fuel is much cheaper, right? Yeah, oil is at $20. So for a country like Indonesia, that really helps their balance of payments. So they're actually much more positive for them, right?
Yeah.
What they export, that's probably the risk, right? I think with China and Vietnam, Asia, you know, Southeast Asia, all these countries, their demand is still driven a lot by external factors. So obviously softening in commodity prices and demand is going to be a shock. But then on the flip side, I feel like there has been a lot of growth domestically. And it seems like also Southeast Asia can be taking some market share away from China from a supply chain point of view. So, you know, net, we're still positive overall on the economy. Obviously, it's may grow a little bit less than before. So we haven't really seen massive numbers in terms of COVID in these places. But you know, again, we don't know, because they may not get all tested, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's the problem.
So, you know, back to your point, on the risk side, of course, we're taking a very careful look at the risk. So, you know, you're right. Part of my business is in the lending side, so that's a risk element. But to be fair, like, big part of my business is really about digital transactions, right? So we actually don't take the risk. The risk is actually being taken by our partners. So they may, and the risk can come in twofold. Sometimes we lend money to people to buy stuff like a credit card. Sometimes it's actually not. Sometimes it's just a convenience of payment. So it's more like a, you know, the merchant, like a retailer, They are giving special terms to their clients in order to facilitate a purchase, right? So, and these are kind of more, I would say, day-to-day stuff, lower ticket sizes, ranging from groceries to kind of, you know, fast fashion type things. So at the moment, I guess as long as employment is relatively stable, then it's very low risk right now. But you know, if things start lockdown, shutting down, you know, and we have prolonged unemployment, then yes, I mean that's the challenge ahead.
Any final words for investors, business owners, how to manage this crisis going forward?
I mean, for us personally, what we've realized is we have to do what's necessary, and that's really the key thing that we've had to face. It's unfortunate. I mean, we're trying to help as many of our colleagues and staff as possible, but they also understand, you know, when a business gets shut for 3 months, even if, you know, we try our best, it's difficult to maintain full employment, right? So you have to make difficult choices. And I would say do it fast rather than delay. And, you know, again, take the short-term pain. And then if things kind of come out of it, then you have the ability to rehire and re-engage, right? But if you kind of delay it and you just kind of let it see and wait and see, then you might not have a business in 3 months' time. Investing side, I would, you know, we talked about it. I said, look, if there are things that you like and you feel are, you know, really good entry price, that you know well, then yeah, for sure, start going in, right? Because, you know, it's very difficult to market time. You know, overall, I would say we're even from an investment side, we're being super selective about how we invest, and we're in a rush. So I would say, like, that may be the strategy to play.
Well, thank you for your insight today. If my listener wants to reach you, can they reach you on LinkedIn or some contacts?
Yeah, they can reach me at lawrence.chu@bppe.com.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. And I hope to catch up with you again soon.
All right. See you soon. Thanks, Kev.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. For details on this episode, go to kevinshee.com. That's Kevin, SHEE.com.